Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, listen, this is important. This is what I'm going to share with you so that you will have the information you need to move forward with any type of gardening you want to do. And so that this information is in your hands. It's not in the hands of Walmart or Home Depot or Lowe's or Bill Finch. It's in your hands. Here are the basic things, and I told you that the thing we forget about is, and this is just a fact of life. It's just a fact of life. Plant roots need oxygen. They need water. They need oxygen. They need a good balance of both. And we forget that plant roots need oxygen. And it doesn't matter if they don't have oxygen. It doesn't matter what else you add to the soil. It ain't going to help because they got to have oxygen. And this is the biggest problem with most of our soils here along the Gulf Coast. They don't have enough oxygen. The oxygen doesn't go deep enough. The roots can't go any deeper. Big problem. And so people say, well, gosh, don't we want to till? I said, no. Tilling makes oxygen worse. It deprives the soil of oxygen in the long run. And the long run, I mean after 2 or 3 weeks. And that ain't what you want. You get a big problem. So what do we do to increase oxygen if we can't till? Well, listen, here's a really important thing. You've heard, I don't know if you've heard about this, but farmers across the country are moving towards no-till farming. It's called no-till farming. They don't till at all. And you know what happens? The oxygen levels in the soil over time increase dramatically. And they're not tilling. And it's the act of not tilling that increases the amount of oxygen. Why is that? Because by not tilling, we allow soil creatures to do what soil creatures do for soil. Let me tell you a little bit about soil creatures real quickly. We think about earthworms, and we talk about earthworms because they're the things we see. But there are thousands of other types of creatures in your soil. There are bacteria, there are fungi, fungus, and a lot of those fungi, please believe me, they are incredibly important to creating topsoil. Incredibly important. Bacteria, fungi, there are things called protists that you don't even have a clue what they are. Everything from amoebas to water molds to everything else. There are things like nematodes, there are springtails, there are all sorts of creatures in your soil. They're all in there working to ultimately create an environment that they all can live in and share, and that is the very environment that plant roots love. You've got to encourage the soil community, and if you encourage the soil community, they're going to make sure that the soil texture is just right for maximizing oxygen in the soil, for maximizing water availability, for maximizing nutrient availability, so you may not even have to add nutrients in some cases. It's those soil creatures that do the work. They really do. And how do they do the work? They need to be fed organic matter. Organic matter is the stuff, it's like leaves from trees, it's the bark of trees, it's wood that's breaking down, it's the insect pieces themselves, it's all of the I'm sorry, I have to say it. It's the poop from the bacteria. It's everything in there all at once in the soil, the organic matter, and that is what creates a soil community, makes a thriving soil community, and that's what plant roots grow well in. It's amazing. This is why no-till farming works. It basically, and particularly if you have something like a root system that gets down into the soil, that stays in the soil, and you have cover crops, that also increases it. It all works out really, really well. And so all of these things are working together to create the soil that you need. And you have to keep working at that. That's why no-till farming really works. You can do the same thing in your own garden, but you have an advantage because you can import organic matter. You can increase the amount of organic matter in your soil dramatically, much easier than a farmer can. So you can get super levels of organic matter in your soil, and when you do that, it changes everything. The oxygen becomes much better. The water becomes much better. You may not even have to add nutrients after a while. The pH, everything is rearranged. Do you need to till that into the soil, this organic matter? No. Why not? Because there are tens of thousands of soil creatures in there that are busy incorporating it slowly, and that's the way you want it incorporated. That's how you maximize the oxygen. And plant roots actually love growing in that coarse organic matter at the top layer, even before it gets converted. It's all very important. You got it's organic matter that sort of is the pivot. It's around which everything works. It's not pH. It's not a soil test. Soil tests don't help you at all. I'm sorry. They'll help you a little bit. I'll give them a little bit. But if you've got a problem, it ain't anything a soil test is going to solve, because it doesn't measure oxygen. But everything revolves around this organic matter. Oxygen availability, water availability, pH, or the availability of nutrients, and even the pH itself, the buffering capacity of the soil, the nutrients, all depends on this organic matter and the creatures that are breaking it down. This is the story we need to tell. Now, you don't see it on TV. Why don't you see it on TV? Because people can't figure out how to sell something that happens naturally. But we're gonna talk about that a little bit more. I know I have Travis, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, man. How you doing?
Good.
I got a question. I just started my first organic garden. Basically, with what you said, a compound of about 12 bags of leaves and food scraps as far as vegetable cores and cut grass and all that, and it composted over probably the last 3-4 months. And I separated the big pile of all this into pretty much four rows, and I planted, and you tell me if it was too late or too early to do this, I planted beets, carrots, lettuce and kale about a week ago, and I noticed on some of the things on Pinterest that if you put like a little bit of burlap on top of your mound, it kind of helps with insects or something like that. And my second question was, I want to do an organic worm bin so I can use that compost, and I was going to see if what would be the right way to build that and where I could get the worms.
Okay, so first off, if you want worms, all you have to do is ring the dinner bell, and that is put organic matter on the ground and you'll have worms. There are tons of worms in our soil. Secondly, worms aren't the most important creatures. They're what people can sell. They can sell you worms, and you can see the worms, so they can sell them, so that's why they get marketed. But worms play an important role, but not by no means is it the most important role in your soil. So don't worry about buying worms. You got the worms. That's just a marketing ploy. There's nothing sacred or even that great about worm manure. It's just gotcha. Like any other manure in soil. So you got all these other, you got 10,000 other soil creatures to worry about or not worry about. You know what to do with them. You just give them the organic matter. So how do you build a compost pile? And this is the next stage. So you're taking me to the next stage here. How do you build a compost pile so that you maximize the value of that compost? And let me tell you, listen carefully, build it where you want to plant. Don't build it separately from where you want to plant. That's something that people in cities in Boston do or something. And it may work for them, but it don't work for you. In the South, if you want to maximize the benefits of that compost, put the compost pile where you want to plant something. and just leave the bed idle there. So if I'm starting, for example, if I'm going to start a new bed, I may go through with a fork and crack the soil. We can talk about what that means later. I don't turn it, I just crack it. I'll tell you why we do it later on. And then I'll just come back with the leaves, and I'll pile them up 4 and 5 feet high, right where I'm going to plant. It will kill out all the weeds. Wow. You don't have to worry about the grass. You don't have to worry about the weeds. You just pile that compost right on top of it. Wow. You've saved yourself a ton of work, and you just let them molder down right there, and then you plant right in it. Don't turn it in. Don't do anything else. It's incredible how it works. So
well,
there's
that makes
a little.
Me feel good because that's exactly what I did.
That's the way to do it, and that's great. Now, we've run out of time, but I want to tell you, the beets, the carrots, you know, it's a great time to try them. It's probably a little early for lettuce. The lettuce is not going to do that well because of the heat is going to be a little bit much for it. Plant your lettuce again later in the year, and it should do better.
Okay.
Carrots and beets are interesting, and I'm interested to hear how they do. You're really going to have to keep them moist. You do want to keep them shaded, but they do need some sunlight. I think you're approaching it in the right way, but you got to keep them really moist. The burlap on them will probably help. And let me know how they do. If you lose a few, don't worry. Come back and replant.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate your time.
All right. Great. We better take this break. Tax man, I'm listening. What's up?
Bill, how are you?
I am so good. How are you?
Good. Look, your caller earlier from Ono Island.
Yes, sir.
Talking about oleanders.
Yes, sir.
Man, I'll tell you, I'm familiar with that sandy soil and all. But you know these oleanders, there's so many colors now, and they do good in full sun. But if I was going to plant an oleander in that sandy soil, I'd get a bucket of pine bark. Now, I want to tell you, I want the black pine bark. Don't get something from one of these box stores that says pine shade. Don't do that. You go where you get a load of pine, the decayed pine bark, like at old time, and put a bucket full in each hole, and those oleanders will just take off real good. And then he can compare his new planting with his old planting. So that's just my tip, okay?
All right. That's good, Tax Man.
Okay. Thank you now. Bye-bye.
Yeah. So we got to take a break now. We're going to be back. Going to talk a little bit more about pine bark. It's right on subject. And Dan, yeah, you know, that is, you have there a Lady Banks rose. It's still there. Don't worry about it. Just got a little stressed. I think it'll bloom this coming year. We'll be back.
If it keeps on raining, levee's going to break. If it keeps on raining, levee's going to break. And the water gonna come and I have no place to stay. Well, all last night I sat on the levee and moaned. Well, all last night I sat on the levee and moaned, thinking about my baby and my happy home.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. You know, we talked about the practice of actually increasing oxygen in your soil by building your compost pile where you want to plant, using organic matter, because the organic matter is continually broken down by things in the soil. One of the other things that happens along the Gulf Coast, and this is really important to remember, is that we have ideal conditions for breaking down organic matter. This is why, you know, if you got a compost pile designed for somebody in Boston, they don't have the kind of moisture, they don't have the kind of heat that allows compost to break down quickly. So they have to really think about it. I'm being generous with them because they love those compost piles up there, and they got all kind of compost contraptions. that they will sell you. And yeah, maybe you need those up north, but down south, everything breaks down so rapidly that that's our biggest problem. We lose organic matter much faster than other people because you've got warm conditions, you've got plenty of moisture, and that means this soil community is breaking down that organic matter at an incredibly fast rate. That means you can add organic matter to your soil very quickly without digging. You don't need to dig. You don't need to dig to incorporate the organic matter. The soil creatures are going to do it for you. And that's why you don't want to have to move your compost, because most of it is going to be extracted right where you put it. So if you build your compost pile over here under a tree, the tree is going to benefit. Your garden isn't. You see what I'm saying? So here's the thing. Put your
There you are.
Yeah, here we go. Here we go. Yes, sorry about that.
You just sorry went away. That. We thought you were holding your breath or something.
Yeah, no. So, any rate, we back on this organic matter subject. I'm so sorry we lost contact there, but we're back. Hey, make sure you put your organic matter where you want it. Remember that organic matter breaks down much faster here than it does in other places. And make sure that you continue to add organic matter. Just once doesn't do it, because it's going to get broken down very quickly. Fortunately, we produce a ton of organic matter. Everybody puts it on the street. It's very easy for gardeners here to make it work. So there it is. That's sort of some of the basics today. Hey, Charlie, we got a caller. I hope. All right, I'm listening. Tom? Is it Tom or Tony?
Go ahead, Tony.
Tony, good. I'm listening.
Hey. Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question about my hibiscus. I have two hibiscus in flower pots out by my pool.
Yes, ma'am.
They're about 3 years old. And this year, in the spring and early summer, they bloom to beat the band. But the leaves have never really developed like they should. They're just real small, tiny leaves instead of the nice lush leaves that we usually have. I don't know what's wrong with them. And they're still blooming, but they just don't look like they normally do. The leaves are just so small.
Well, that's a tough one. Sometimes herbicide damage can cause leaves to be smaller or a little folded. Is there any possibility anybody sprayed any Roundup or anything like that around these plants?
No.
Okay. But this variety of hibiscus has always had big leaves until this year, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, Well, it could be, and it could be that in spite of the stress, they're still blooming. Usually hibiscus don't respond to stress. Usually hibiscus don't bloom as well when they get stressed. At least that particular hibiscus does. So how long have they been in the same pot?
They bloomed a lot at the first of the spring, but now they just bloomed. They're not blooming like they usually do either. I mean, I'll have one or two blooms here or there, but I mean, it was nothing for me to have 16, 17 blooms at a time.
Yeah. So, how long have they been in the same pot?
About 3 years.
Oh, you got it. There's the problem. I'm so sorry. I should have asked that the first thing. So basically, almost every year you need to repot. You can do that in several ways. You can increase the size of the pot. But at this point, that soil is going to be pretty bad. And you're going to need to do it. I would go ahead and do it now, because if you wait until next spring, you're probably going to get root rot and other things. You want the ground to be warm so that the roots will redevelop. But listen, here's how you're going to need to do it. And it's going to be hard to get it out. How big is the pot?
Probably about 3 or 4 gallon pot.
Okay. I'd try to find a slightly bigger container for it. If I could find a 7-gallon container, that would be probably an ideal size to increase to. And it's going to take a little bit. Is it a plastic pot or is it a clay pot?
It's a ceramic pot.
Ceramic pot. So what you're going to need is, and this is, it's going to be really hard to get it out of the pot. I'll tell you a little trick. If you have they make these cake spatulas. Have you ever seen a cake spatula? That's a big, long spatula that you spread the icing on the cake with. Yeah. It kind of looks, if you can take that and you can run it around inside the pot and you'll break the connection between the roots and the sides of the pots and it'll be much easier to get it out of the pot.
Okay.
When you get it out, you're going to shake off the dirt. And don't be ashamed to just shake off as much dirt as you can. Take it over in the garden somewhere where you need a little extra goopy dirt and just shake off as much of that as you can. All around, you can actually pull some of it off with your fingers until you get it back to just a little bit of dirt right around the base, and then shake that, make sure it's okay, and then repot, trim the excess roots on the sides. Trim some of those excess roots, and then pot it in that larger pot with very fresh, the best potting soil you can find. And that'll probably last you about 2 years. And then you're going to need to repot it again.
Well, let me ask you this. Can I plant them in the yard? I really like to plant them beside the pool where they are. Will they survive? Because I usually bring them in and put them in the utility room in the wintertime. Will they survive out there by the pool?
Tell me what variety. Where'd you get this? Where did you get this one?
Where'd I get what?
Where'd you get your hibiscus? Where did it come from?
From a produce stand. It sells plants every year in the spring.
Okay, so we have no idea how hardy it is. We don't even know what variety is. So I can't tell you. Some of the tropical hibiscus are moderately hardy. They'll be killed back to the ground, but they'll reemerge. And that only happens if they're not grafted and if they're moderately hardy. I don't know if yours is one of those.
Yeah.
I
think we did leave them out this year and they survived, but we didn't have a very hard winter either. Hello.
Okay, Charlie, I don't know what happened. We lost our signal again. Yeah. I'm sorry. Ask that question again. We lost our signal for just a minute.
I said I think we did leave them out this year, but we didn't have a very harsh winter.
That's right. So they'll be a little hardier in the ground itself. But, it's a risk you'll have to take. I don't know. I can't tell you. If it's on the south side of your house, around your pool, in an area with lots of concrete, it will probably be a little bit warmer, and it may survive there. But otherwise, if you want to be safe, put it in a larger pot.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. You're welcome. Going straight to break here, but we're going to be right back here in just a minute. So feel free to give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Okay, there he is. There he is. There he is. lots of questions. Lots of questions to follow up on. David, one of our many Davids, but one of our very distinctive Davids over in Baldwin County. David, I hope you're getting a little rain over there. I know you're busy around the state. Love to talk to you about what you're seeing. Give me a call sometime. Let's talk about it. But he said he's asking me I talk about a list of trees that we've worked on for the city, and it was a list of about 100 trees that we is part of our right tree, right place system. It was the city's choice to release that, and I think they have. I was talking about with the city forester last week. Let me check to see how you get a copy of it. I think it's a good list, and it's a very thoughtful list. It has a lot to do with what's available, and what we really know works. It's about street trees. It's about street trees. It's not about every tree, but trees that would be appropriate for streets. And trees that I love we say explicitly, do not plant these trees. Because if you plant them on a street, you're going to run into trouble. Plant them in a forest. Plant them somewhere else. But let's don't plant them along a street. It's a good list. Let me check on that, David. I'm glad you asked. The other thing David asked, and I this is really great. Because I talked about this, I didn't get any, I kept waiting for people to bite a little bit. You know, you put your bait out there, you kind of hope the fish bite after a while. So we got a few nibbles, but not strong nibbles. But this is something I've talked about a lot. Can you just have a winter lawn instead of a summer lawn? And I think it makes a lot of sense in a place like Mobile to do that. And particularly, well, throughout Alabama. Do I just recommend ryegrass? Yes. I'm going to say that ryegrass is the one to go with. Fescue is the other alternative that's easy to get hold of, and fescue is spawn of the devil. I mean, it is the worst. It is just, there's so many reasons not to use fescue. Let me just say, please don't use fescue. I don't think it would work that well in Mobile anyway. Certainly along the Gulf Coast, but generally across Alabama, it's spawn of the devil. It is just a terrible thing to do to any place. And no, I don't recommend it. Rye, different story, can be very useful. The biggest issue is, what are you going to do right now? Because none of those winter grasses are going to look good right now. They're all going to be dormant or dead. So you start resowing probably about the 1st of September. Bobby and I argue about this. If you can get the irrigation on it, I think 1st of September, mid-September is probably a good time. Gives it plenty of time to get up and going. That's what I would do. And we'll come back and we'll talk more about that. And David, I'd love to hear from you sometime. Let's call and let's just talk about that on the air, how practically to do it. It'd be a lot of fun. I know I have a caller. I'm listening. What's up, Ed? Ed, what's up? Ed, are you there?
Go ahead, Ed. Talking about Roundup, they said it was safe at first. There's a car that's taken, and they'll sell it to stores. So what's the deal?
Ed, I'm only hearing part of it, but I'm pretty sure that the question... Yeah, it may be on your speakerphone. Can you ask the question again? Ed, just one more time.
Yeah, it was down lower, or down high. Problem with Roundup. They still sell it to stores. Is it still safe to use?
Yeah. So here's the thing. Ed, gasoline is not safe. It is one of the most unsafe things you could possibly do. It is unsafe in so many ways that it is astonishing. It is carcinogenic. It is highly carcinogenic. It contains benzene. It is shocking how dangerous gasoline is, and people still use it.
I'm talking about Roundup.
I know. And I'm talking about Roundup, too.
Oh,
and Roundup is very different than gasoline. It is much safer than gasoline. It does not have any of the carcinogenic, the known carcinogens that gasoline has. So I'm making a comparison. We have a very weird attitude towards chemicals. The ones that we're familiar with, the ones that we use all the time, we accept the dangers of those chemicals. And then we focus on something like Roundup that has bad parts. I mean, it can cause bad things in certain circumstances. But compared to the chemicals that cause really bad problems, I mean, it's nothing. There is very little firm information that indicates that that the active ingredient in Roundup, glyphosate, causes serious problems to people. It probably causes some, as most chemicals would, if you use it all the time, if you use it in a careless way, if you use nutmeg all the time and you use it in a careless way, it can have the same effects. It can be as carcinogenic as anything out there. It's just that if you use Roundup safely, if you don't use it all the time, if you don't use it on your food products, which is an incredibly stupid thing to do from any perspective, right, which farmers are doing now, all those things are bad. On the other hand, if you use Roundup to get rid of cogon grass, if you use Roundup to get rid of privet, if you use it where you really need it, and you use it at the rate and with the frequency that you should, if you're a sane person, it's not going to be a huge problem. I don't think EPA is going to take it off the market. I hope they don't. On the other hand, I do think people are using it too much, and I think people who are commercial appliers, people who apply Roundup commercially, they need to be taking a lot of precautions. They need to be using gloves, and they need to be using masks. They need to not come in contact with it. Now, here's the other thing, and Ed, I'm sorry to have to go into this detail, but it's important. In Roundup, there are a lot of things besides the herbicide, glyphosate. There are carriers, things we call carriers. Those carriers are probably as dangerous or more dangerous than the active herbicide itself. And so it's increasingly suspicious that the big problems that Roundup causes may not be the result of the herbicide, but the carriers themselves. We know that the carriers are designed to break down surface tension between molecules. So they break down the surface of the leaf. They actually tear up the surface of the leaf. You know what they do to frogs? They eat the skin off of frogs. This is not the herbicide, but the carriers in the herbicide. They eat through the skins of salamanders. They cause all sorts of problems. And they probably have a similar effect on humans. So if you could find a herbicide that was just pure glyphosate, rather than big Roundup, you would be safer. It wouldn't have the carrier. It wouldn't have the surfactants. And there you go. So it is a complicated question. I do not see Roundup in the same way I see gasoline. That's what I was trying to say.
Okay.
Gasoline is a huge problem for the environment. It is a huge problem for people. Roundup has its problems, but it doesn't even come close to gasoline. So,
all right.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
Does that help? Yeah. Yeah, thanks for asking, Ed. And it's, you know, you're seeing right now, you're seeing a lot of people suing because of their exposure to Roundup over a lifetime of use. Juries who are not scientists are being asked to weigh, did Roundup cause this? You know, it's a complicated question. Chemicals are complicated. They are, you know, we take them for granted. You want to worry about the stuff? Worry about the pesticide you're spraying for the roaches in your house. I would worry about that. I would worry very carefully, and you got to really worry about those kinds of things. I think Roundup on a list of things, and I'll tell you, the herbicides that they're using to replace Roundup, they are so much worse. So much worse. We'll be back. You got any thoughts about that? Give me a call. It's an interesting thing to talk about. We're running out of time, though, so give us a call back before the hour is out.
The fair is blue, the mountain knows. Is not an iris or a wild rose, but a little
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yay, welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast Sunday morning. We only have a short time, so I'm going to run through these things very quickly. Rita sent me a message saying, you know, they use glyphosate as a desiccant, which is basically means it's a defoliant, basically. It causes the plant to lose its leaves, and they use it on oats prior to harvest. They may do it. I can imagine they use it as a defoliant on a lot of things prior to harvest. A desiccant, would they use it to dry the oats down? Maybe that would work too, but that's the applications where use of Roundup worries me. That's the kind of things we ought to be questioning. Roundup used in the normal way, the ways that it was originally designed for, is much less of a threat. I cannot tell you what the effect of Roundup is when you spray it over a food crop. I don't really want to have to contemplate what that would be. That is just too close for comfort. So Rita, that's a good thing to bring up. If it is used as a desiccant or as a defoliant, it's important to know. And that's probably not so good. Got a question about, are there any natural fungicides for squash, Korean ball squash and Trombochina squash? Once you start seeing powdery mildew, no. In fact, once you start seeing powdery mildew, effectively, there is no fungicide that you can do to stop it. Even the most toxic. And certainly you wouldn't want to spray a toxic one because you're going to eat those things. So powdery mildew is one of those things you kind of have to live through and live with. I have not had my production shut down by powdery mildew yet, but I can imagine it sometimes happens. The conditions this year may be just right for that powdery mildew. It may not be a problem next year. I think you may have to live with it. Harvest what you can. I hope you had a good harvest. Let me know if you didn't. And let's talk about that next week. And then Johnny in Grand Bay has got this great question. He sent me a picture of this plant. He said it's feathery looking. It's kind of fluffy, feathery. It's out in the pastures. It smells like pickles when you break a stem, he says. Oh, it is this thing that just every child in Mississippi and Alabama knows that smell if they're out in the field. Oh, what is it? We all know it's Eupatorium capillifolium, otherwise known as dog fennel. I love dog fennel. Dog fennel has some great stories. It is really this kind of beautiful thing. I want to say it's one of those plants that kind of helps hold the South together. It does. It comes in when we've really messed things up and sort of holds the soil together. It can be a problem because it sometimes persists longer than some land managers would like. You'd like to see the grasses come in, but you got this big old dog fennel coming up over it. It doesn't burn that well. It's all sorts of weird things. But dog fennel is one of the coolest plants in the world. Not edible. In the old days, and I remember this, people used to say that it was, they would spread dog fennel across stables and on floors where you had fleas and other things to repel the fleas. It actually has a strong, that odor is a strong natural defense chemical that discourages insects. And I used to wipe the dog fennel on my face. I don't know whether it's safe or not. I used to put dog fennel down my shirt and in the hopes that it would keep chiggers and ticks away. It may have worked. I don't know. It certainly seemed to help with flies and horse flies and mosquitoes. Dog fennel is what it is. It resembles European fennel in its appearance and to some degree its weird smell, but it is not edible in the same way. But what a great plant. What a cool plant. Dog fennel, it's one of the great undervalued plants of the South. So something to think about, something to think about. You know, Rita also pointed out that that Roundup has been found in Cheerios. And my view is that Cheerios without Roundup is probably as bad for you as Cheerios with Roundup. I would just avoid the Cheerios altogether. You know, this is part of the discussion. We should have the same discussions about Roundup. And it is very different to apply it to food that you eat than it is to apply it in the woods or to invasive species and to other places where it's much needed. So just a good conversation to have. Let's be sure to have that conversation and understand that Roundup is many things. It's a carrier. It's a herbicide. It's the combination of those two that cause problems sometimes. There are many, many ways to think about it, many great safe ways to work around it, and to make sure it works for us rather than working against us. Hey, we started out by talking about soil. You know, listen, we said that oxygen is the one thing that you can't get by without in your soil, and it's oxygen deficiencies that are killing plants directly. How do we get oxygen in the soil? You remember what I said? It's organic matter interacting with all of those soil creatures. If you don't get that organic matter in your soil, you got a big problem. You got a big problem. It's the organic matter that saves your soil. And it does it by making sure there's plenty of oxygen. And it's the pivot point around everything else. We're going to come back and talk more about that next week. We're going to talk about, do you ever break your soil? Yeah, we're going to talk about how to do that properly. And we're probably going to talk a little bit more about trees, too. We'll be back.
Just yesterday morning, they let me know you were gone. Suzanne, the plans they made put an end to you. I walked out this morning and I wrote down this song. I just can't remember who to send it to. I've seen fire and I've seen rain. I've seen sunny days that I thought would never end. I've seen lonely times when I could not find a friend. But I always thought that I'd see you again. Won't you look down upon me, Jesus? You gotta help me make a stand. Just got to see me through another day. My body's aching and my time is at hand. I won't make